Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as MobiStripPress.com, both excellent sites for content and information regarding Republic Review. I will also state that if you want to call in, the lines are open. I know that because I took care of that. The lines are open. And so if you want to call and you happen to know me, I only ask that you abide by my three C's, especially those who know me. The first C is for you. Please be confidential. I go by GR. I don't want to be outed by somebody that knows me or is a friend. But anyway, that being what it is, the day may come. Anyway, I will tell you that you know when you're really affecting and rattling people, when you're driving change, then people tend to fight back or push back, and I expect to be outed sometime. So anyway, the other C is be civil, and the final C is be concise. Those are my three C's, and so you're more than welcome again to call. I know I promised that, and I didn't mention anything yesterday. There's a little bit to this setting up a crowdfunding, but I am in the process of going with Fundly, F-U-N-D-L-Y, and we're setting up a campaign. And so working with them in all the different, obviously there's some layers to this, but I will let you know as soon as it's up, and we'll also have this posted as well as on Facebook as well as the websites and so forth. So we're going to try to get the word out as wide and as fast and as broad as possible. I will let you know the reason why you may want to tell your friends and other people why they would want to support this effort is because Reclaiming the Republic is the only solution-based effort that I know of. It's not about just getting people out and marching and protesting something. What this is a solution-based system that is designed to address and stop federal overreach, period. It is solution-based. So with that, we are organizing with other organizations, and I'm hoping by the end of May to be able to tell you some of those organizations. I know I'm working with the Constitution Association, and so hopefully these other organizations who share our desire to restoring our constitutional republic, or what I call a hybrid constitutional republic, hopefully we'll have a good, nice, long list. We have only so much time, and I believe the people are starting to perceive the urgency. So, again, I will keep you abreast, but I am in the process of doing this and working on the different layers so that I can get this done right and effectively. Because bottom line, I could put a page up and it may not get that far, and it may not get the attraction that we need it to get, because we really do need to succeed. We need to be able to go into a few of these states and affect them. That being said, if you haven't heard and if you haven't been tuning in regularly, I do have a bunch of new stuff up on the ReclaimingTheRepublic.org website. It's right there on the homepage. I actually have my bullets of the irrefutable argument for Republic Review, as well as the bullets on the model describing what the model process is, as well as a graphic picture. Just follow the model link at the very bottom, or you can go to the Take Action page at the very top. The model link is there as well. And I would also ask that if you can start sharing this presentation that I give in providing people the insights on the Constitution and what we can do about it constitutionally and how we can actually engage with the federal overreaches and actually get the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. How great would that be? They would all of a sudden stop spending on unconstitutional powers, no longer burning our debt up, and we'd actually be able to, in a yearly basis, actually see that debt crank down significantly. That being said, I can't do this without you. And as a matter of fact, I had an interesting conversation with an author. I want to get back to him. His name's Jeff Wright, and I want to have him on the show because he's talking about how things are going to go through dramatic shift and change due to technology driving these things. Corporations driving these things and so forth. If you haven't heard, Amazon is working for home robots, basically trying to create a robot for your home. I'm not sure how many people are going to love that, but I honestly believe that there's going to be a division of people. And this is some of the things that I want to talk to Jeff about. I honestly believe and see that these technologies coming that are going to be very dominant, an Internet of Things and those types of things, I believe they're going to start creating a division. And I honestly believe that it will, it may actually lead us towards the, you know, that, what is it, the Terminator a type of a civil war, that there will be some great rejection of artificial intelligence and a wholesale rejection of robotics and those types of things. I even go back to, you know, how mankind, right out the gate, when Adam and Eve just was out on their own, living the commandment of living by the sweat of their brow, and some of their children's ancestors thought, hey, you know what? Some of these other people, these are dopes over here. Let's capture them and make them do our work for us. I truly believe that there is a very important factor in the human in the human condition, that a person needs to work, a person needs to have self-worth in what they're doing, and I think we're going in a very bad direction when we're starting to make machines do all the work for us. And so that kind of becomes even more secular towards that that mind model of eliminating ourselves from having to do anything. And I do know that there'll be some big ramifications if we do follow these courses that he's presenting, because these things are coming down the pike. I'm not going to deny that. I'm not a denier of it. But I truly believe that if we're going to allow ourselves to move forward at our pace instead of at the pace of what technology drivers want to drive down our throat, then we will be very apprehensive in surrendering to the latest and greatest gadget. I know that there are these people that are called early adapters, but that being what it is, I fear for the Republic and those who are so quick to throw caution to the wind and adapting to that new gadget and that new thing, not understanding the liberties that they're surrendering by being out there and being monitored and being recorded or what have you, like with these echoes and so forth. All these things are doing is basically monitoring you, and we're supposed to implicitly trust corporations where we've already seen those lines blurred and crossed. And so I figured I would let you know. I'm hoping to have him on so that we can talk about his premise, because we talked about Republic Review. And I truly believe we have time to engage Republic Review. And if we do that, it will help us in dealing with some of these other problems that are going to be facing and forced to deal with. That being said, as I was looking around, I thought I had saw something in the news, but I was mistaken. There really is no sign or news that the federal government is disbanding any of its tyranny or tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. So with that, I'm going to have to move forward with the theory that we're going to have to do it on our own. So we're going to get into some more ratification debates and some different issues within them. And my fascination with these appendages to our Constitution. So with that, when we get back from the break, we will have those. So thank you so much. This is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. This is G.R. Mobley. Did you know your overall health is connected to your dental health? And as you get older, this becomes more and more important. If you're like me, going to the dentist can be terrifying. So for me to maintain my dental health and overall health, I need a great dentist and staff who are sensitive to my fear, pain, and even my fear of the cost of dental work. This is why it took me almost 2 years to find a great dentist after I moved here. Bottom line, I need a great dentist just to get into the chair, even for a regular cleaning. This is why I personally recommend Dr. Vaughn Tracy as not only a great dentist, but a patriot and a dentist that cares about your comfort and health. You can find him at VaughnTracyDDS.com. That's VaughnTracyDDS.com. Then you can agree with me, it's great to have a great dentist. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. If you've listened to my weekly show, Reclaiming the Republic, right here on Red State Talk Radio, every weekday evening from 6 to 7 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. It is a hard, fast contract. In accordance to Article 7, the states are the only stakeholders in this contract, and inherent in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight over the contract. This means they can audit the contract against the general government and the unconstitutional powers they are exercising. Any single state can perform this audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what I refer to as Republic Review. Please read my executive summary on reclaimingtherepublic.org to learn the details about Republic Review. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. So the interesting thing, as I was going through some case studies on the guarantee clause, I found it interesting that the Supreme Court actually used and cited Federalist Papers. What did I say yesterday? I said that the ratification debates are because it was the period of discussing specifically the states' approbations and problems and rejections of the Constitution this dialogue and testimony from those who were at the Constitutional Convention, those delegates who were bearing testimony in defending, explaining, defining the Constitution. Those things in contract law are legally binding. The Federalist Papers were literally arguments that were in the public forum between anti-Federalists and Federalists. And pretty much it was John Jay who wrote a couple. And then Madison and Hamilton wrote the remainder of the Federalist Papers. And so even though I consider them a founding document, they are not a legal definition and or an appendage. Now, granted, the Federalist Papers were used to help persuade people in understanding the Constitution. They were not official testimony that was a part of the debate. And so the debates are, and that's why I hold them in a different level, different sphere completely from the Federalist Papers, because the ratification debates go hand in hand with the Constitution. As a matter of fact, I hear people all the time, as a matter of fact, there's a particular conservative entertainer that says that he can use the Constitution to beat any argument by itself. And I'm here to tell you that John Marshall used the Constitution and beat down any argument as well, as he was perverting the Constitution. And so there is enough ambiguity to allow the federal court and the court system to literally persuade the public and others into believing that, oh, well, that supremacy clause or that necessary and proper clause or that commerce clause, boy, that gives you this open portal to do whatever you, because you tell us it does. And it doesn't. But that's because they are not using the ratification debates that clearly delineate the limitations of what those clauses mean and do. And so I wanted to share that with you as I was looking, the fact that the court system uses the Federalist Papers, where, you know, I do use the Federalist Papers. I think that they're very instrumental in helping you understand the paradigm. Now, as I kind of lean forward a little bit, there's one thing that kind of come up that I saw in the news today, that California secession is moving forward. They're actually starting an initiative to find out if the people of California want to secede from the Union, which means that they're going to basically take us back to 49 states, that they're not going to be a part of the United States anymore. Now, there's lots of people that look at Lincoln and what Lincoln said and did as, well, they can't do that. There's just no way that the state of California can constitutionally do that. Well, I've got a Federalist paper here that says contrary. This happens to be James Madison in Federalist Paper number 43. And before I read it, let me go to my favorite little diatribe that I like saying. Are the words in our founding documents that I am citing today the words of deceit? Or are the words that we have been taught from our progressive education system, the progressive colleges and professors, lawyers, politicians, and bureaucrats, the words of deceit? I could even throw in the words of presidential tyrants, such as Lincoln, when he basically said, you can't do that. Apparently, he didn't have the Federalist Papers, but I'm telling you, the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, the ratification debates, even the notes on the convention were not widely disseminated. It was not until the internet, and actually some maturity level on the internet with education and so forth, where this stuff actually started getting out there, where you could actually gain access to these source documents. How was one to read the Federalist Papers back in the 70s? How was one to read the ratification debates back in the 1970s, before the bicentennial? The internet didn't exist. You couldn't go down to a library and find them. As a matter of fact, most of the states did not have them. Why is that? Well, because they didn't think they needed them, because they were told that they didn't need them by politicians and lawyers, that we know what we're doing and we're doing everything that we constitutionally can to make this better for them. And truly they were. So anyway, let me get into this Federalist Paper number 43. And this is James Madison, and he basically says, a compact between independent sovereigns, which is the Constitution, independent sovereigns being the states. So a compact between independent sovereigns founded on ordinary acts of legislative authority can pretend to no higher validity than a league or a treaty between the parties. It is an established doctrine on the subject of treaties that all the articles are mutually conditions of each other, that a breach of any one article is a breach of the whole treaty, and that a breach committed by either of the parties absolves the other and authorizes them, if they please, to pronounce the compact violated and void. Okay, so that sets the groundwork that California can actually secede. But what does that mean? Anybody help me with that? Well, what that means is that California actually has to come up with a term or a... I mean, it's one thing to secede because you want to, right? You know, it's like, I don't want to pay my mortgage this week or this month, and so I don't want to. Well, I'm not going to have to. Well, hold it. No, there's a contract that says you got to pay that. And unless that contract has been violated, like if I don't pay that contract or pay for the mortgage, then I am violating it, and that gives the other party the ability to just basically take the house from me, right? Well, so in this particular contract, we kind of committed to this union for, you know, domestic tranquility and all those things. And so what I am trying to find out is, can anybody articulate what California is considering the terms of the contract that are being violated? What is it that the federal, is California actually going to be the leader in saying that the Department of the EPA is unconstitutional? Are they going to say the Department of Energy is unconstitutional? No, are you kidding me? Those guys are in league with every single progressive policy that the federal government is in hand with. So what are they complaining about? I mean, they want to promote even more draconian measures in taking our property rights and liberty. I mean, look at exactly what they're doing down there. And so Trump is coming along trying to say, hey, you know what, we're going to try to enforce the Constitution, and California say, well, we're not going to have any of it. I don't believe that there, I don't believe that there's grounds for secession. I believe grounds for secession are, you're violating the Constitution by instituting these controls on our property, controls on our commerce, controls on our transportation, all of these types of constraints and controls and bureaucracy that they're burying us with. And so I'm looking for a real legitimate violation that California can point out. And if you have one, just give me a call. And if not, we're going to get into the ratification debates when we come back from the break. Thank you so much. My show, Reclaiming the Republic, is more than an educational show. My intent is also to work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is result-oriented and is live across the Republic. Download and share our podcast. Like, follow, and share our page, Mobius Strip Press, and the articles and content posted on our Facebook page. Get informed about groups in the local area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests access to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I'm working with Trevor Lawton, Douglas V. Gibbs, Tom DeWeese, John Hancock, and many other good patriots in setting up rodeos for Republic Review this summer. We're doing this in Wyoming, Utah, South Dakota, Idaho, Kansas, and North Dakota for this election cycle. If you are beginning to understand the power of Republic Review, then we need your help one way or another. More importantly, if you live in these states or know any patriotic leadership, whether that's an elected official, grassroots leader, or political leader, please reach out to me on Facebook or email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know who we can work with in organizing these events. It is our intent to get one and hopefully all of these states to call for Republic Review. If we can get this started, I promise you we will make America great once and for all. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are supporting to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. That number to dial in is 215-TALK-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. Okay, so one of my leading points that I wanted to get into, and this baby is by John Marshall. So who was John Marshall? He was the Supreme Court justice that started usurping and stepping outside the boundaries of jurisdiction of the federal government, by implying that the federal government can do anything necessary and proper in the Maryland v. McCullough decision. There were seven landmark decisions. I don't have them in front of me. But as a matter of fact, it would only take me a second. And I think it's really important that I provide these to you. So I will give them to you. Marbury v. Madison was the first. This ruling stepped into the boundaries of property rights for jobs for federal employees. Nowhere in the Constitution did that allow this to occur, but even more insidious in this particular ruling was the fact that the Marbury v. Madison case was well outside the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled it was called judicial review, and they reached down into an inferior court and pulled it up to basically go after Jefferson and Madison, because Madison was pursuing the fact that they didn't need to fill all these court seats that Adams, in his midnight court appointments, were trying to do. And so, to be clear, Marbury v. Madison had a two-edged to the sword. Fletcher v. Peck was in 1810. That was another one where marshals took latitudes in interpreting the Constitution incorrectly. Sturgis v. Crown and Shield, 1819. Dartmouth College v. Woodward in 1819. And McCulloch v. Maryland in 1819. And so all of these were overreaches of supremacy, necessary and propers, and so forth. And Cohen's v. Virginia and Gibbons v. Odgen, 1821 and 1824. These were the landmark cases where basically John Marshall lied and told everybody that the federal government can do whatever it says to do. But see, the problem was that there was no footing for these because there was no such thing as precedence in court decisions. This is when courts would make a ruling and then that would be it. So in the ruling of Maryland v. McCulloch, the background on that was that Maryland was trying to tax the federal bank that was in on the property or within the boundaries of Maryland. And Marshall ruled that they couldn't do that. But in the ruling, he goes on and on and on if his bloviating opinion or just lambasting these anti-federalists and so forth. And he was basically going after this concept of creating unconstitutional footings. Because show me in the Constitution, have any lawyer show you in the Constitution where case law is the is considered a part of the Constitution or that you can use case law to move the Constitution. You won't find any word, any acceptance of case law being a part of the Constitution. It's a contract, right? Now, do you have a contract with anybody? You probably have a cellular phone contract. You probably have an internet contract. You're streaming this service. You're hearing my voice via streaming or via the airwaves. And so if you have, let's say, a Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, I don't care, whoever that contract is, have you ever heard of Verizon law? Have you ever heard of T-Mobile law? No, because those contracts do not make law on itself. There may be a decision regarding an infringement of patents or what have you, but that has nothing to do with the contract. When you go in and say this is either in the contract or not contract, it doesn't become a Verizon law. It becomes a decision on whether it was in the contract or it wasn't in the contract to say that it was contractual or a violation of the contract. That is, in essence, what contract law and constitutional law is. There is really no such thing as what lawyers have aggrandized themselves into telling you that there is this thing called contract or constitutional law. It's either in or not, and the burden is on the Supreme Court and or the superior courts to determine where and how to prove that it was or wasn't. The problem I have is that when Marshall and other justices blabble their opinions in these rulings, they don't cite anything. And to me, that is bad conduct because I think there needs to be academic standards to the court that the court has to cite precisely where. And if there is something that actually contradicts what they're citing, then that should be able to overturn their opinions or negate their opinions. And as a matter of fact, I do not like opinions attached to decisions. Either it is in the contract or not in the contract, and keep your cotton picking opinion to yourself, as far as I'm concerned, because we'd be far better served, because opinions are just like you know what's and they all stink, right? Anyway, This is John Marshall, and he's talking about federal jurisdiction, and he says, Mr. Chairman, these, sir, are the points of federal jurisdiction to which he objects with a few exceptions. Let us examine each of them with a supposition that the same impartiality will be observed there as in other courts, and then see if any mischief will result from them with respect to its cognizance in all cases arising under the Constitution. Now, again, he's saying, with respect to its cognizance in all cases arising under. So the key word there is under the Constitution. If it is not within that Constitution, enumerated, so it's not under the purview of the Constitution, it is out of the jurisdiction. So I go on. Under the Constitution and the laws of the United States, he says, that the laws of the United States being paramount to the laws of the particular states, there is no case but what that is will extend to. Has the government of the United States power to make laws on every subject? No, it doesn't. Does he understand it so? So can they make laws affecting the mode of transferring property or contracts or claims between citizens of the same state? Can they go beyond the delegated powers? If they were to make a law not warranted by any of the powers enumerated, it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. They would not consider such a law as coming under their jurisdiction. So here's a guy that said that in the ratification debates and then started saying things in perverting the Constitution. Do you see the duplicity? Do you see the insidiousness of what he says here in selling the contract? Because these are the truths of what he is saying, that Constitution is limited to the enumerated powers, and everyone was saying that. As soon as the Constitution was agreed upon, him and Mr. Hamilton started inserting these implications and inserting, well, that kind of means something a little bit more, and it's above your head, so you can't understand this. But believe it or not, we have all powers necessary and proper, because that's precisely what that son of a gun did. And I am telling you that we are reaping the woes from his many decisions that he has inflicted. Now, even though they may have been somewhat innocuous and somewhat bloviating or self-aggrandizing the government, and they in themselves did not create a lot of the problems, but what they were footings. John Marshall and Alexander Hamilton created unconstitutional footings that deviated and parted from these very plain definitions that they even provided. And I'll get into Hamilton later when we get into the New York ratification debates. But I am proving to you that these guys knew what they were saying, and when they started saying contrary words, they knew they were lying. And in doing so, they were preparing the way for other nefarious deeds and usurpations, such as the creation of the Department of Interior, which was an egregious violation of the Constitution. And I'm up at another heartbreak. So my time flies fast when you're getting into the ratification debates. So I will have some more ratification debates for you when we get back. Please stay tuned right after a word from our sponsors. Thank you very much.
This is G.R. Mobley. Most of you understand the importance of having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategic goal for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail. And if you don't have a long-term strategy, you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain or restore your dental health to what it needs to be. to develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Tracy at VonTracyDDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive of businesses who are supporting to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. This is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Thank you. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, these conventions require states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. These conventions are unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to get my executive summary on Republic Review and listen to Reclaiming the Republic right here on Red State Talk Radio every weekday evening from 6 to 5 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific. Thank you. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. It's speaking season, by the way. And as a matter of fact, as soon as this show is over, I'm crossing boundaries, a few different boundaries, to get into a more distant place to speak to a bunch of patriots. And so if you would like to have me come instead of, you know, displaying my presentation, and you'd rather have me in person, by all means, you can reach out to me. Hit me up on Facebook. My email is also on the reclaimingtherepublic.org website, as well as the Mobius Strip Press website as well. And with that, let me move on to Governor Randolph in the ratification debates. They were kind of talking back and forth over, and I'll tell you, the Bill of Rights, because George Mason made such a command decision when he rejected the Constitution in signing that, it became a huge driver. He was a very well-respected man, and I'll be honest with you that he was so fixated on the need for a Bill of Rights, and you can thank him probably for being the number one adjutant for or the irritator for ensuring that we got this thing. But in going through the ratification debates, you'll find that it comes up quite a bit and it dominates a lot of the discussion. You know, George Mason loved lots of the and understood the Constitution. He was there. He was a delegate to the constitutional debates. And so anyway, this is Governor Randolph, and he says, "I'm afraid I have tried the patience of this House, but I trust you will pardon me as I urged by the importunity of the gentleman in calling for the reasons of laying the groundwork of this plan. It is objected by the honorable gentleman over the way, Mr. George Mason, that a Republican government is impracticable in an extensive territory, and the extent of the United States is urged as a reason for the rejection of this Constitution. Let us consider the definition of a Republican government as laid down by a man who is highly esteemed. Montesquieu, so celebrated among politicians, says that a Republican government is that in which the body or only a part of the people is possessed of the supreme powers, a monarchical that in which a single person governs by fixed established laws, a despotic government that in which a single person without law and without rule directs everything by his own will and caprice. This author has not distinguished a Republican government from a monarchy by the extent of its boundaries, but by the nature of its principles. He, in another place, contradistinguishes it as a government of laws in opposition to others, which he denominates a government of men." And so it's kind of interesting. Montesquieu does argue, as a matter of fact, that Republicans or a Republican form of government is better suited for smaller entities. And so as we start looking, each of the states were supposed to be set up as Republican forms of government. And that's why the counties with sub-elements are within them. And you can tell that the population centers of most all the states in our union have been dictating and dominating what is to be done within the states, like Chicago. Chicago just completely dominates Illinois. And so what would be better is that Illinois kind of severs off Chicago, isolates it in its own state, and creates a southern and northern Illinois so that those who don't want to have anything to do with the ills of Chicago, the bloodbath that is occurring and so forth, split up that state. So politicians in the counties that are to the south and outside of the Chicago boundaries and so forth, they should be screaming and clamoring, we need to divide the state and we need to stand up a new Illinois. Same thing with Michigan, with Detroit. Same thing with Milwaukee and Wisconsin. Same thing with Minnesota. Every single state that has these large central concentrations of populace, leave them alone and split that state up so that now you can get the true voice and representation of the rest of the people within that republic. Because if not, the noisy population centers are going to continually drown out those who are living out in other regions of the republic who are supposed to have a voice but have lost it because they have formed these republican forms of government into democracies where they favor the population over the rest of the rural areas and the counties. In other words, they've walked away and they've moved away from counties and towards population parameters and so forth. As a matter of fact, I'm going to miss this militia one. I'm going to go beyond. Actually, yeah, it is in this. And I only have a little bit of time. So I'm going to read a little part of this where Madison is talking about the militia and their roles and responsibilities. And he says, those who wish to become federal representatives must depend on their credit with that class of men who will be the most popular in their counties. So I've highlighted this because I want you to understand that their frame of reference within the states are counties. It's not by legislative districts that seem to blur around and move. And that's what they called back in those days gerrymandering. If you understand, states basically established counties or blocks of land by population. I think I was talking to somebody. Somebody told me that it was 10,000. The population requirement for a county to be established required 10,000 people living in it, and then they would create a county. And then that county would get its own representation as well as, you know, for the Senate and its own representation as a person to represent them in the House of Representatives. Anyway, let me move on. Would be more popular in their counties, who generally represent the people in the state governments. They can therefore never secede in any measure contrary to the wishes of those whom they depend. And see, that's why I just want to stop here. That's why it's important to keep it constrained by the counties. As you start smearing and you allow population centers to start moving those lines so that they favor population, you are literally opening up a can of worms that will create tyranny, because the cities will dictate to the counties in the rural areas. And they spoke out about this. They were vehemently against population centers dictating at the expense of the minority. You can always hear, if you look up the word minority through these debates, they're typically speaking to those that are living in the least populated counties and the never reaches of the states. And that those people were not to become the footstools for, you know, the population centers for them to be ruled. They were to have a voice. And that's the same thing with the Electoral College. We were to have a voice. It is almost certain, I'm going on here, it is almost certain, therefore, that the deliberations of the members of the Federal House of Representatives will be directed to the interests of the people of America. As to the other branch, the senators will be appointed by the legislatures and those elected for 6 years. I do not conceive they will too soon forget the source from whence they derived their political existence. In other words, he's basically pointing out that the representatives have to draw very closely to the hearts of those people who are voting for them in the congressional districts. The same thing with the senators. The senators have to basically keep in mind who they're supposed to be drawn to and honoring their constituents, which were the states. Here's the problem with our system now. Now that we have an elected system that is open for sale, then we now literally have corporations and businesses coming in and buying up our politicians. It's not just about the advertising. It's about all the other assistance that they give them in giving them latitude, because money and affluence is latitude, my friends. And so when they throw all this money and buy these senators, this is why we've got to overthrow and reject the 17th Amendment. But when they do this, when they buy this influence and they come in and buy our government, then our government isn't even representing us. There is no way senators are even concerned with what is going on in your life. There is no way senators are remotely concerned with what is to be something that you would be really concerned about, as far as that's why they rule in favor of the EPA for some corporation or for some other advantage. Be well aware of the fact that everything that the senators to do in our day today is for corrupt and capricious reasons, and they have machinations of grander controls of you, because that's exactly what those who are buying them want. There's no doubt in my mind, the Senate has become the most corrupt body, and the House is not far behind. but we can reclaim this republic with your help. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'll be back tomorrow, and we'll be continuing in educating and making you the fountain of power politics. God bless.